Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live, Monday edition on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. A little weekend wrap-up for you, a lot of stories to talk about. Fake news warns about fake news. The border is busting open. We've got details about that. And, of course, emails, and more emails. Information about the big email scandal and lots of insight on that coming up. And more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
Is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on 101.3 KPCG. We have an online live stream, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at kpcgfm. And email us any questions, comments, concerns, etc. Comments at kpcg.fm. We appreciate those. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with me here today on this Monday. We're getting back into the swing of things. And nice weekend overall here in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area. A little cooler than expected yesterday. We were only up to, like, I think it was 72 or 3. And we've been in the mid-high 80s, so that was refreshing. I liked it.
Yeah, it was crisp, but it was also, like, the beginning of summer. It was actually, like, summer in the north, pretty much, how it always is.
Yeah, they're saying this November and into the winter in the northeast in particular, up in New York and that area, is to be significantly colder than last year, which means it's going to be normal, I guess. They say most areas of the Northeast this November will likely be perceived as being rather cold. I think that's the official meteorological term. It feels rather cold out there. They say they expect this November and the winter, for that matter, to be significantly colder than last year. But temperatures are likely to be average or near normal. Last year, the temperatures were 6 to 10 degrees above normal during the period from November through December. So no more global warming. It's over, apparently.
Apparently. Yeah, it just kind of debunks that myth right away.
We're going to a global norming now.
Global norming.
It's back to what it used to be. People are like, it's so cold here. No, it's just normal. So I know here in Oklahoma, we've been about 10 degrees above average for October. So, you know, you do expect it to start to cool down. It's going to be like 88 today.
Yeah, that's really, really rare, even for here. And we've had some pretty warm falls, but this seems like it's pretty much like year-round for most places, but it's here in Oklahoma, which should be a lot colder by now.
If I've got to turn that air conditioning on in October, I'm not going to be a happy camper, I'll tell you that. And I had to a couple of days. Football over the weekend, both of our teams lost. Bills lost, and so did the Packers, so. We didn't have a good one in that regard.
No, but at least the Thunder won.
They did.
Still undefeated.
Yeah, Westbrook is playing incredibly well. On the football landscape yesterday, this is kind of a funny story. Seahawks safety Earl Thomas hugged a referee and got flagged for it for unsportsmanlike conduct.
What?
Yeah, he picked up a fumble in the first quarter, ran in for a touchdown, and was so excited he hugged the official, and he threw a flag, and he got a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty, unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So no touching the refs, no touch.
Not at all, even in an affectionate way.
No hugging. So that's one of the complaints about the NFL recently is there's too many penalties. So
it's called a no-fun league.
No fun league, yeah. Can't hug the officials. So that was kind of an interesting story. And a bad story here out of one of the NASCAR races. There was more than 20 hurt when a driver plowed into the crowd after a NASCAR race. There is some danger in those races, even though they've made the fences higher. But this is after the race. This wasn't even involving the race car drivers. It says almost two dozen people at Martinsville Speedway in Virginia were hurt after a driver ran right into the crowd after a NASCAR race on Sunday. Police said they took the unnamed driver into custody for questioning. The crash unfolded about 30 minutes after the race, and the driver jumped a traffic line. Many of the injured reportedly were fans waiting for the racers to leave the speedway after the race. A track spokesman said 22 pedestrians were injured, 9 people taken to nearby hospitals, but they'll probably be okay. So kind of a bad deal when you have a car plowing into a group of people.
That's shocking. Yeah, I think those cars, thankfully, they're so low to the ground that they couldn't even run anyone over if they wanted to. So it's at least that way no one gets killed.
There's a one of the guys I was talking to over the weekend is heading down to a NASCAR race here, I think next weekend. And so we were kind of talking about that. And he has not been before, so he was, you know, kind of excited to see it all. And I always think of years back when the tire flew up into the crowd. And that's what made them raise those fences. One of the tires blew off the cars, and I think it actually killed some people. So you have to be careful whether it's actually the race cars in the race or the crowded parking lot or wherever it is. Anytime you get a lot of people together, and I suppose people have just watched the race, so they're kind of excited, and they want to race their Toyotas or whatever.
Right.
So who knows what happened. But anyway, that was an accident there in one of those NASCAR races. You ever been to a NASCAR race?
No, I've been to a track, and I actually got to tour all of the special seats, and then we drove around the track in a van, and it's almost like the van was parallel to the ground, like we were going sideways up the bank a couple times. So I can't imagine what it would be like going 200 miles per hour and then feeling like you're sideways.
Yeah, that would be quite a feeling. It'd be fun to take maybe just a lap around with somebody that knew how to drive and zip around and just get a feel for what that's like. I wonder if they have that fantasy race camp. Bring your own car and go around the track. They have fantasy baseball camp, right? You can go to fantasy basketball camps.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it might be a little bit more dangerous if they had a fantasy race camp, but if you're willing to put your own car on the line, who knows? Maybe they would allow it.
Maybe so. Over the weekend in Chicago, they were, of course, excited about the Cubs winning one, at least, and keeping the series going. But bad weekend overall. CBS Chicago says 17 dead, 41 wounded in Chicago weekend shootings. 17 dead, 41 wounded. I mean, that's like, it's a war zone. We've talked about that before. I don't have a running tally here, but the numbers are just really, really high. And it's interesting because it's not like it's the top story or something. It's, you know, way down at the bottom. Like, oh, by the way, another brutal weekend in Chicago. I don't know what they got to do to fix that problem. get rid of the gangs, I guess. Get rid of the crime. That's where most of it's coming from.
Yeah, and it really is a war zone. That is the best way to describe it. I think it's something like almost 4,000 people have been killed in that city since Mr. Obama took office. Not that that's a related thing, but it could be. But yeah, 8 years, about 4,000 people, 500 people per year killed. That pretty much destroys the totals of any other city, I would think.
Yeah, very high numbers, and I would imagine that probably affects their tourism, the bottom line on the tourism. It's a really nice city in places, you know, like if you watch the Cubs games over the weekend, it just looks electric. People there having a great time, but sadly, people getting killed too. Mm-hmm. So it's a bad situation in some parts of that city. You may be thinking to yourself, I haven't gone and seen a good movie in a while. There just aren't a lot of good movies that come out these days. To me, it feels like, anyway. But they're doing something different now. New York Times, theaters open doors for an election worthy of the big screen. You can go watch election coverage in a lot of movie theaters around the country.
Really? Mm-hmm. That, I hope there's one near us. That would be pretty fun to experience.
Yeah, I didn't check to see, but it could be, because some of these are AMC theaters. We have AMC around here. It says the dramatic presidential campaign of 2016 has often felt like something beyond even Hollywood's wildest imagination. So it seems fitting that when this two-year slog toward Election Day finally comes to its conclusion on November 8th, you'll be able to watch it in stadium seating with surround sound, clutching a box of popcorn oozing with butter. When I think of the election, I always think of popcorn and butter.
It really has been that entertaining this year. I mean, think what you will about what is being said, but it has been extremely must-see television.
Yeah, what rating would it get, do you think? R? Couldn't bring the kids.
Yeah, it seems like some of the attacks are a bit dirty.
Yeah, some of the information's a little inappropriate there, and I wonder if they'll do it in IMAX, too. You get the IMAX theater with the 3D glasses. It's going to be CNN's coverage, so you may not want 3D glasses for that. But it says AMC Theaters announced on October 24th that it would show CNN's election night coverage in 50 theaters in the United States, designating a red and a blue theater in each of the 25 cities so you can sit with your buddies. You don't want to sit with the Democrats or the Republicans if you're the other side. But so while this might be entertaining, I could see it being very dangerous too, because somebody's going to lose. I wouldn't want to come out of the one of the theaters and meet the people from the other theater. That could be a bad deal.
Yeah, it really could be. I also wonder why they don't give the Red Theater Fox News, give them a different stream. I think most people would think that CNN would have a more liberal bias, and the Red Theater might not want to watch that as much.
They should also have a neutral theater. Can there be like a neutral, an independent theater? Right. Where you don't have to be one or the other. You're just kind of watching it.
Where's the Gary Johnson Theater?
Yeah. Yeah, there's two people in that theater. It says that it follows a move by rival chain Regal Cinemas, which showed the final two presidential debates in more than 200 theaters across the country. So people were even showing up for the presidential debates. Sometimes people do that in bars. I've seen that on TV where they'll go to the bar and watch it, but theater, I've not heard of that before.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to do that at a bar as well. That actually might be more dangerous than a theater because of what's available at a bar.
That's true. They said they're hardly alone, these two cinema groups. Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, a chain based in Austin, Texas, saw more than 7,000 people attend its debate screenings this fall, said John Smith, its social media director, and is planning for election night events as well. The chain, famous for its zero-tolerance policy on cell phone use and talking during its screenings, relaxes those rules during the election events. He said, you've got people in a room for 2 or 3 hours watching cable news together. It's one of the few times we can come together and watch something together. So it's tearing us apart, but it's bringing us together.
Just extremely different views all in the same place.
So I will not be attending one of those theaters for my own sanity and protection. But I don't know if it's here in Oklahoma City or not. Of course, we have listeners all around the world at kpcg.fm. I don't know. Some people are obviously going to want to go watch in a theater, so we'll see how that goes.
It might be interesting to experience for a couple minutes. Maybe that can be my next adventure.
Right. We'll send you out there for a live report and see if you come back
alive. I'll wear body armor.
Yeah, you'd want to be careful what you said. It could really rile some people up at those theaters. So anyway, that'll be interesting to see. And like I said, there's not like a lot of good movies that they'd have to bump. So maybe this is the thing to do. I don't know if they're charging. I would imagine they are a little bit, at least for the popcorn.
Seems like you could make some pretty good money off of that. I mean, it seems intriguing to me. If it was Fox News, I'd probably be a little bit more likely to go just because I respect their coverage more.
Well, that's an interesting lead-in. It's almost like we planned that lead-in. That was tremendous.
We really didn't because I don't know most of these stories.
No. No, me either. It's just as they happen.
You don't know most of this.
This is interesting, right? CNN warns people to be careful of fake news. This is from the unintentional comedy section of today's program. CNN warns people to be careful about fake news. That one of the comments on the story is, it's comedy that CNN warns people to beware of fake news. It's like communists telling you to beware of fake news.
Well, really, that is exactly what it is in a lot of cases.
So this gentleman, Brian Stelter, he made the comment, I guess, on some talk show yesterday. And he says, as soon as I spoke about this on television on Sunday, CNN detractors filled my inbox with messages saying that CNN is the ultimate example of fake news. He says, but that's a deliberate attempt to confuse the issue. No, I don't think it is, actually. He said, whatever fault CNN has, such as being fake news, he says news organizations, small and large, try very hard to report the truth. I don't know about that. He said fake news sites and Facebook feeds, on the other hand, traffic in misinformation. My sense is that there are three buckets of these sites. So there's buckets of fake news sites, he says.
He could have said there were baskets of those sites.
That's what I was thinking, baskets of deplorable news sites. These are the three buckets that he says these sites fall into. Now, I'll read them, and you just think about, say, CNN, for example. He says, number one, hoax sites with totally made-up news headlines that try to trick you. I've seen a few of those on there.
Definitely.
They're just ridiculous. Forget it. I was thinking about four or five today, but don't need to get into those. The second basket, he says, is hyper-partisan sites that aren't lying per se, but are misleading. Misleading is lying, so there's a misunderstanding on his part. he says they're not lying per se, but they're misleading because they only share good news. They only share good news about your political party and bad news about the other party. Yeah, that would be them every single day, wouldn't it?
It seems like it, definitely.
Every day they do that. Every day.
Mm-hmm.
They might have kind of a pseudo bad one, but it's just a quick mention, and then they get back to attacking the other side.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is hybrids, he says, that purposely mix a little bit of fact and then a lot of fiction. Yeah, again, yes. All three. Three for three there. This is an actual story on CNN. I can't even believe it's a real thing.
They have done so much to destroy their own credibility recently. I mean, some of those, I guess you could call them anchors, really have gone so far to protect one candidate that it just gets ridiculous. And you can see in the ratings that they are losing badly to Fox News, which, despite what people say about them being having a conservative slant, the owners, I think, are both liberals right now, the two sons. And there are quite a few liberals I can think of on that station.
Yeah, I think probably the difference is that they actually do occasionally have something from the other side, from whatever their view is. They do try to show two sides, typically, mm-hmm. whereas some of these other sites are just so in the tank for the liberal side. It's not even funny. So
Megyn Kelly has gone off the rails recently, just mm-hmm. Pretty much equating the Trump video from 11 years ago to a scandal that half the country thinks is worse than Watergate with these emails. They're not on the same level at all, especially when five of those Trump accusers have been pretty much debunked completely. That's not even an issue. That's a complete distraction. The Clinton emails, on the other hand, point directly to how corrupt someone is and really should disqualify her from running. They're not on the same level at all.
Yeah, there's a lot. We got more information about that coming up here in a little bit. But I think my guess is that CNN's making this story because their ratings are getting hit,
mm-hmm.
because people are going other places, realizing that the coverage is so biased. So they come out and say, well, beware of fake news. Well, they are fake news,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, I mean, some of the headlines I read on there, I think I'm reading The Onion. You know, that college parody paper, I guess, right. Website now? They sound like The Onion. There's even some today. They're just outlandish and ridiculous.
Well, most of the articles we've had in this day in poor high school journalism have come from that website.
There was two. I almost could have pulled the day, and I was like, we don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm.
But just ridiculous stories where there's a clear agenda, and it's written from that perspective. Like, here's the point I want to make at the end. And so I'll just make up a bunch of stuff to get there. It's not fact. It's not true. It's just, I'm going to tell you what I think. My opinion, I'll push it off like this is factual news. And that's opinion.
And again, they're surrounded by people who believe the exact same thing. So they're just convinced it's fact when the majority of the entire country, I would say, doesn't believe what they're spilling.
Yep. So be careful for the fake news. I wanted the headline to read, Big Fake News Warns of Little Fake News. Because that's really what it is. So here's something that makes me a little nervous. Run for it. Smart fabric generates electricity when you move. Do you want to wear a shirt that makes electricity?
No.
I don't either. I don't want to be wearing electricity, I don't think. They say your morning jog helps burn calories, but someday soon it may charge your phone as well. A new smart fabric developed by researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology generates electricity from movement and sunlight and stores it in the fabric's fibers. So you're going to wear a shirt that's full of electricity. What happens if it starts raining?
It could charge your phone and make you 50 times more likely to get struck by lightning, right? I mean, it just doesn't sound like the best idea.
Yeah, that's right. that brings up all kinds of other ideas. But it says the objective, this is the guy that's developing it, the objective was to harvest energy from our living environment. For example, human walking or muscle movement and fabric, the goal is to drive small electronics. And this research recently attracted a lot of attention because these days, flexible electronics, wearable electronics, have become very popular and fashionable, but each of them needs a power source. So I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea, but I don't want to wear clothing that's making electricity, I don't think. Unless it's static electricity. I don't even like that.
Right. Yeah, even static electricity seems to be a pretty big inconvenience for it. Just keeps sticking to your body. No one likes that.
No, in the wintertime, especially here in Oklahoma, it gets so dry because of the wind and everything. And every time I get out of my car, like, I automatically know I'm going to get shocked by the car door. So I'm kind of always wincing when I shut the door in the wintertime. So I'm already making plenty of electricity. I just need to harness it for my phone.
That just shows you how tied we all are to the devices when we need a shirt that can charge a phone for us.
I think it would be great to, he says he wants to harvest energy from natural sources. It'd be great to go like a step backwards and have a coal-powered phone. Just put like a lump of coal in there and burn it.
Well, since we're going to use electricity, why not use every source? Yeah. Why not unlock every different mode?
Coal, wood burning. I have a wood burning cell phone charger in my office.
And then once you start spilling out all these other ideas, then it just kind of shows you how terrible maybe the first one was.
There's a somebody was telling me they used to live up in Portland. They're always into like alternative technology and energy sources. And I guess there's this one place you can go where they make smoothies, and you can ride a bicycle to power the blender. But the employees don't do it. You have to do it. And the person that was telling me about it was like, I'm not riding the bike. You know, I'm paying you for this smoothie. I don't need to ride the bike for it. So there's all kinds of ideas out there. A lot of people like to ride their bikes. They should put a little generator on that thing for the phone. That could work.
That is a good idea, actually. Then maybe gives people some motivation to exercise. I was discussing this with someone recently. If we all had to maybe ride a bike to keep the lights on in our house, how much more in shape would we be?
Or how much darker would it be in the house?
Yeah, I think that's actually more likely.
Well, it's always funny in movies where they're in like a pitch black cave and someone's like, light a match. And they light the match and the whole room lights up. Like, what kind of a match is that? You ever been in a really dark spot and lit a match? It doesn't light up a lot. It lights up like the stick of the match.
It's not going to expand hundreds of feet.
No.
I never thought of that before. Yeah. That's a good point.
I always think of that in movies and TV shows, I guess, because there's been a few times where we've had the power go out and you got to light a candle or something, and it doesn't light a lot of area. And then you see the movie and it's like, quick, you know, and they light the match and also the whole wall lights up and they're looking for clues and with one match.
Yeah, you need a gigantic torch for something like that.
Oh, yeah, easily.
If even that would do it.
So, hey, I'm sorry to ruin it for the moviegoers out there that like those scenes.
That does ruin it for me, actually.
Indiana Jones was a fraud.
So many things, like, there are so many things in movies that are unrealistic, but even the things I thought were realistic, you're disproving for me.
I'm debunking all these, things. Of course this happened. I love this story. I don't know why. This isn't right. This shouldn't happen, but I find it to be so funny. Video footage of a man who wrestled with a giant panda bear after breaking into a zoo enclosure in southern China went viral over the weekend. This actually happened, and I don't know why. The video taken last Thursday showed the man sneaking up to Mi Ling, a 265-pound male panda, and touching the sleeping bear on the head. So he breaks into the zoo, he goes into the panda cage, and he touches the panda on the head. Good idea, you think?
No, because those are often portrayed as nice and laid back, but I think they're actually surprisingly vicious.
The 12-year-old panda woke up and grabbed the man's leg, pushing him to the ground. After wrestling with the bear for more than 5 minutes, the man broke free and fled the enclosure. Authorities at the zoo in the southeastern province of Jiangxi said the panda was probably just playing with the man. Is that something he normally does? Like, oh, he woke me up, I'm going to play with him. So the man disappeared with only a tear in his trousers. The giant panda is prized in China as seen as a conservation success story whose cause has been championed right up to the highest levels in Beijing. So this guy breaks into the zoo, I guess after hours, and he wrestles a panda for 5 minutes and then runs away.
He really got away with one. It could have been so much worse for him.
It could have been. I just want to know what his motivations were. You know, was he, that's quite a story. Not that you'd want to tell people because you'd get in a lot of trouble, I think.
So they did find out who the man was?
Well, they've got him on video, but it doesn't appear that they have captured him yet, or at least they didn't give any personal information. You know, can you imagine that? You're going through the film the next day, just kind of scrolling through it like normal, and you're like, hey, wait a second. This guy wrestling a panda for 5 minutes.
This maniac in here doesn't value his own life.
Maybe he's training for a mission. He's the Kung Fu Panda. For those familiar with that movie. So I don't know.
They really have several of those movies.
And they're,
so
they're great.
Very popular. Yeah.
They're very funny. So anyway, he was maybe trying to learn panda style kung fu. Apparently he was good at it. I mean, so this would not be recommended, but yeah. Somebody say to him, hey, what happened to your trousers there? Ah, just fighting the panda.
That's a great story to tell, though, yeah. Because if you survive 5 minutes in a cage with a bear, you would think probably he could survive quite a lot.
You know what I would do? If I caught the guy and I was like the authorities, I'd first find out what he was doing and why, and then I'd say, hey, don't do it again, and then I'd be like, eh, go on your way. I mean, he faced death for 5 minutes. He walked away from it.
I might even just wink at him and say that just – I'm not looking. Maybe do it again.
If he had a superhero name, it would be Captain Bamboo. Captain Bamboo.
Sounds nice.
Fights the pandas. If your village is under attack from pandas, Captain Bamboo.
If the panda ever wakes up from his nap for long enough to attack a village, he'll be there.
He'll be there. Yeah. Wow. Strange story, but I just thought it was great. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury. That's coming up in a little bit from Edstone, England today, and he's talking about something that we're going to talk about a little bit with Abraham Blondeau here. It's about what happened with the emails being released over the weekend, or I guess it was on Friday, and lots and lots of emails. I think it was like 650,000, something like that. A huge number, and of course, that's part of the October surprise. Abraham, thanks for stopping by with more information about this situation.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Was that right, 650,000 or something
yes,
like
that?
Yes,
that is correct.
That's a lot of emails.
It is.
I don't, you know, I've sent a few emails in my day, and I'm sure it's a lot more than I realize, but 650,000? That's a lot of emails about yoga.
Yeah.
Or whatever they're about.
Yeah, that's right. All of them have no sensitive information at all.
well, lots of yoga poses. So how many poses are there? So this story you've got, which ties into that Trumpet Daily Radio Show, is from the Washington Post. And this is an open letter. This is a letter from Eric Holder, right? Former
Correct.
Attorney General. James Comey is a good man, he says, but he made a serious mistake. Eric Holder made a few mistakes, too, if I recall. What does he have to say about this?
Yeah, this is really interesting, obviously, because Eric Holder's, he was the Attorney General. He very prestigious office. He does really this letters about really chastising James Comey for releasing information that could have a sway over the election that's in just over a week. He does chastise him for that, say it breaks protocol.
You know, one thing about this situation that's kind of, there's so many weird layers to it, but I just think about what James Comey said before. They found thousands of emails, right? And he said, well, yeah, they shouldn't have done it. It was a mistake. Move on. Well, why do more emails change it, right? It's just more of the same. Why is it different now than it was back then?
Right. Yeah, that's really the question I think a lot of people have because—
not that I agree with what he said the first time, but I'm just saying if that's the reasoning and the logic behind it, why is it different? You know, it's like we caught you doing more of what we knew you were doing.
Right.
So,
well, if those other emails weren't enough to indict her on charges, then these new emails, he says that he's not sure if they bear any significance, but that he's going to reopen it anyway. So it is a little odd that he would do it in this manner or that he would do it at this time. But it is just interesting here what Eric Holder has to say because this whole situation is interesting. The timing of it, obviously, is at the worst time for the Clinton campaign in many ways. But I think what's interesting is that even though the FBI closed the case on the Clinton email scandal, a lot of other people haven't. and it's still something that people strike against Clinton. And obviously, a lot of people think that James Comey made a mistake by not indicting her on charges. So even though the case is closed, quote unquote, really politically it's not because it's still a hot topic issue in many ways.
Well, is it even really closed? I thought I saw something where they said there was a technicality or something where they didn't really legally close it. I'm not sure if there's been more about that or not.
I haven't seen that yet.
Well, it's still ongoing one way or the other, yeah.
Yeah, the deeper you get into it, the more confusing it is.
You'll have to email me all the points about it so
that's
I can
right.
read it.
Yep. It probably will be 650,000 points. But this this letter here from Eric Holder is interesting because the main reasons he chastises him is that he doesn't think Comey had the wrong motive in doing this. But he says that that by giving misinformation to the public, by speaking publicly on an issue before it's decided, it can let people have the wrong idea on a partisan issue, especially as an election. And that basically he broke all protocols that were in place by the Department of Justice, and that he's really he made a public announcement about this when he shouldn't have. And when I was reading through this, I just thought there's a slight touch of irony here, because if we remember the main cases where Eric Holder was investigating, there are a lot of, I mean, it's his job to talk to the public, but nonetheless, there are a lot of public statements pronouncing judgment before any of the facts are in, talking and making opinions on bipartisan issues, especially on race, and really inciting a lot more emotions on subjects that were very, controversial. So it just, to me, it seems like the criticism here is just a little out of place, especially when this James Comey, he is investigating someone who could be the president of the United States. And if there's any concerns before an election, before the president, to my personal opinion, is he felt compelled to let people know that, hey, this person could be the next president, but we're still finding more and more layers to just one area where she might not be fit to be president, or that there's still some controversy there.
Yeah.
But to me, just the way the media's reacted since Friday is that they're really, James Comey unwittingly became the scapegoat for Hillary Clinton and the media by just, they're just completely lambasting him for what he did. And I don't know if he did what he did was right or wrong. I don't really know enough about the role of the Department of Justice and all that with these things. It is a controversial thing to say before the election. But at the same time, it is just amazing to me just how the liberal media is playing this up as, well, this is going to affect the election. It's not rigging it, but it could alter everything. It's just maybe someone just that's trying to do his job properly.
Yeah, there's a couple of things about that that are interesting to me. First of all, the main one that you brought out is that this current administration, and including former or Eric Holder there, they've been involved in so many things, they really can't say anything without the irony being very, very rich. Like, well, you're accusing them, but you did the exact same thing, and here's all the examples of that. So that stands out to me. The other thing that stands out to me, the whole thing with the email, the way it's been handled is so sloppy. And for professional politicians and professional, people in the government, it just seems a little too sloppy. And it'll be interesting to see what comes of it all. But it is interesting. I'm just surprised how sloppy it is, and I wonder if it's sloppy for a reason. I don't know if it is, and I don't know why. But it's just a little bit too sloppy, I think.
Yeah, that is a good point, because usually these kind of topics are very taken very seriously, but it seems like both sides, those being indicted and those doing the investigation, haven't really done it very thoroughly at all, either covering up or
right.
or trying to investigate it really thoroughly. So,
I mean, is it just like the height of arrogance that, like, well, I can do whatever I want and I'll never get in trouble for it? Or, you know, is there more at play there? I don't know. It's very interesting to see what'll happen.
Yeah, and one more thing I saw that kind of relates to this in a more shocking way was Newsweek released a cover saying that Donald Trump destroyed, and his companies destroyed, lots of key documents and emails and stuff that he's hiding. And it's like, well, who cares? He's a businessman. I mean, maybe that's wrong. I have no idea. But, I mean, he wasn't Secretary of State dealing right. with confidential information that could really undermine the integrity of our defense as a nation. I right. mean, that's a completely different level. And for a magazine to come out as like that's their top story, to yeah. me, is just a little ridiculous.
Well, it's just another case of like a five-year-old saying, yeah, I did it, but look what they did.
Yeah.
I don't care what they did. You did it too. I mean, right? If you know, anybody that's a parent, you know that. I mean, kids always do that. I didn't do it, they did it. Or I did it, but they did it too. Well, it doesn't matter. You're all in trouble. right? And they're trying it and hoping that it works.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what we're really seeing here is that, like with Eric Holder, he's a very prestigious man. Loretta Lynch, any of these other people holding high positions where they can offer their opinion or their judgment on a case. Like you said earlier, you really can't accept it because everyone has been had their hands in so many things that are wrong or that bad judgment calls corruption, that who really can you trust? Where isn't there hypocrisy or some kind of just irony that they're the ones having the high moral ground?
Well, even in just talking about irony, even his writing into the Washington Post, he's doing the exact same thing he's accusing Comey of.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know what happened, and he's already passing judgment publicly on it, chastising him for passing judgment publicly on it before it. He's doing the exact same thing even in this letter.
Yeah, exactly. It's to me, it's just making this a very serious issue with the emails. I don't know what's going to become of it, but it's turning it into a game, really, in the media. We're accusing, name-calling, or just having these big names write letters. That, I mean, there actually isn't a whole lot of substance to the letter anyway. Writing these letters to try to tell voters, like, well, Comey's wrong. Don't worry about it. Just stick to what you were going to do in the first place. Especially since Clinton's lead is evaporating in a lot of key states the closer it gets to Election Day. So, I don't know. It is just an interesting game that's being played out here, and you can really see people on both sides really scrambling to get the best foot forward, I guess, before Election Day.
Yeah, the whole thing's really strange. It just seems like even the people that are in the Clinton camp, they're doing this strange thing where it's like, we're going to cover for you, sort of, and I just wonder what they're up to, because they're not totally covering for, they're leaving a lot of things out there for her to really look bad. And I thought they were better at covering up than that. So that's what's weird to me about it. And we'll see. I guess we'll see where that plays out or how that plays out. But it just seems so unprofessional that, even in the way that politicians hide things, and they do, they're usually pretty good at it. They're not good at hiding these things. I just wonder why.
Yeah. And it especially with the amount of scandals there's been over the last 8 years, that this is the one that's, there's so many loose ends that they can't get a hold of. It just seems like an odd, just an odd way for Clinton to meet her downfall. I don't know what will come from it. Maybe nothing, but that's just, it's just like a nagging thorn in the side that's staying there.
Well, another thing that was brought up, and it was brought up in one of the debates, Hillary Clinton, she kind of just threw an allegation out there hoping that it would stick. She said, Donald Trump, him and he's in cahoots with Russia. So, if he gets in there, Russia will get what they want. And I thought, well, you could be blackmailed for how many things now? I mean, and there's opinion pieces on that today, people talking about that. Even that alone is dangerous because of all the illegal things that have happened or potentially illegal things.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't Russia already getting what they want with the current administration? I mean, she basically will continue on some of his policies in some ways, from what I understand anyway. But yeah, it's a great point, just that really whoever wins in this election, America loses. Really, I think that's what it comes down to, because there's just so many variables, and the fact that James Comey here had to come out and say, well, he wrote a letter to Congress saying, like, well, we found even more emails with this allegation. Now, if someone's running for president, even if it turns out to be nothing, they should still know. The public should know, because I mean, it is that person is going to be commander in chief. They're going to decide the future of this nation for 4 years, and the fact that there are still allegations out there is a bigger reflection on her character. That, I mean, there's already so much evidence out there anyway, but it is just people should just really wake up and see what's going on here.
Well, right, there's no good options. The election coverage right now is about who is the least corrupt. It's not about policy, like what are you going to do about all these serious issues, as we've mentioned before. And so that's really dangerous. I mean, it's about just who is the least corrupt, I guess, and people being very specific about who they want in. They just want their person in there. Okay, well, then what? What if they do get in? Then what happens? And I don't think anyone's asking those questions.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the more stunning things is I think Trump gave a speech about his first 100 days in office, and that's the most substantial information I've ever heard on this platform, because I don't, besides some of his remarks about certain topics like immigration, etc. But no one really knows what's going to happen on day one or day two, day 100 of whoever is the president next. And
it's day 101 we've got to worry about.
Yeah.
We know the first 100, but how about after that?
Yeah, I think another thing we have to consider is what will our enemies do on day one, on day two, day 100, day 101? What are they planning to do? Because, I mean, a lot of other world powers base their politics on what America is doing as well. And depending on who gets in and the massive uncertainty that's there, it's going to be interesting, too, to see what the rest of the world does, not just inside of America, but what all these other world leaders decide to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Abraham, thanks for stopping and bringing us that information.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, and you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, at kpcgfm. Email any questions, comments, concerns, recipes, anything you'd like to. Send those to comments at kpcg.fm. Thanksgiving recipes. You can send us some of your favorites. Actually, we'll share them with our listeners.
Pass them on to my wife. That's a good idea.
If you have a good recipe for the turducken, send that to us. The John Madden's famous
turkey duck chicken combo.
Yeah. It's a rare bird. It's hard to find that in the wild.
Apparently that's real. You can combine the three meats. I think they do sell those, but yeah, the way he said it, I always thought he was talking about one bird into one, combined into one. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he wanted to stick them all together and eat it up. After those football games, the Thanksgiving game, they always give out the turkey leg to the MVP. Let him chow down on that thing. Oh, looks delicious.
What a blessing.
Yeah. You've got an interesting write-up here, Grant. This is with the border. This is from Breitbart. Exclusive. Agents accuse feds of covering up record border detainee numbers for 2016 election. Yeah, with all the email scandals going on, hey, how about that border? What's going on down there?
Well, it's not looking too good right now, and maybe that's why they've endorsed Donald Trump, because he clearly represents a change of direction from what we've seen recently. But yeah, they have actually, it's called, the National Border Patrol Council. They have endorsed Donald Trump, but their parent company, called the Customs and Border Protection, has actually been keeping this information secret. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting, because the smaller company that is accusing the bigger company over it of corruption. I don't know how that's going to work out for the smaller company, but maybe they'll be in a little bit of trouble for saying that. But this man here says, we are at breaking point. We have the highest number of illegal aliens in custody in history.
Wow.
In Border Patrol's Rio Grande Valley sector, and this information has been kept from the American public. That's one of the agents talking. He also said, the talk of amnesty has once again created pull factors and encouraged people from all over the world to cross Mexico and then cross our porous southern border to illegally enter the U.S. We are simply overwhelmed.
Right. They think that if Hillary Clinton wins, he'll get amnesty. And they think that if Donald Trump wins, there'll be a giant wall overnight and they'll never get in again. So now's the time to pour in. And as they say, from all over the world, there's people coming from all over. It's just a route to take. And who are these people? Mm-hmm. And what are they up to? That's the concerning question.
That is. And you can just imagine what these facilities might look like, where they're detaining thousands of people at a time. And the thing is, a lot of them, it's understood that they'll be released on the American side,
right,
and be expected to return somehow, or will they actually stay in America? Which one do you think that they would rather do?
Right. And I think last week we had a story about where people were getting caught on purpose. You know, like, here we are, because they'd be taken to a facility, they put a little ankle monitor on them, and then release them into the wild. you know, who knows what they'll do? I don't think they'll come back. Are they actually being monitored? How hard is it to get one of those monitors off? Well, you just need some wire cutters, right, or something? Cut that thing off, throw it away. I mean, we could all assume that they would never do that, but I think most people would. And again, if we don't even know the numbers, or if they're not being released, who's going to be held accountable, or who's keeping count of who is out there? And making sure they come back to wherever they're supposed to come to. Yeah, nobody, that's the thing.
Yeah, there is really no way to keep track of these, I guess, millions of people who are pouring across the border. When you catch them and then let them go, what's the point of catching them in the first place? It really it defies common sense what they're doing right now. And the smaller company I was talking about has actually accused the larger company of playing political games ahead of the most impactful election ever, holding back critical information from the American public about what these Border Patrol agents are facing. A lot of them are being even killed by this stream of illegals, but they can't. They feel helpless to stop it because a lot of the time they're not really allowed to stop most of the people who are coming across.
Can you imagine going in every day and that's your job, knowing that your hands are tied, you can't really do anything, you know, they're keeping secret from the public what's really going on? That would be a very depressing situation.
It would. Yeah, it seems like it would be one of the most hopeless jobs out there right now. And it's also interesting because they described it as babysitting. That was one of the words they actually used, because here they are watching over these thousands of people in their facilities while the criminals get through and the Border Patrol agents can't really chase them down because they're watching these people at the facilities. It just is a hopeless, pathetic situation because they really are being taken advantage of by really this administration.
Well, again, and that's the thing, you know, who are they beholden to in this case? It's, well, the current administration, isn't it? I mean, why not release that information? They certainly would release it if it was in their, you know, if it would dethrone, say, a Republican president. But because they've got a Democrat in there and they want to keep a Democrat in there, they're going to keep that information secret. So obviously it's politicized and it's very serious. It's a national security issue. And to me, that's as serious as anything they're talking about with emails.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. It might even be more imminently important than anything the emails might have, although those could be a threat as well. We don't really know for sure how much of a threat they could be. We do know, however, how serious of a threat the border is, and it's hard to even fathom a nation like, I don't know, Iran. Would they just watch as people flooded into their country? If Jews flooded into their country, for example, not really. But for some reason, America's the only nation in the world expected to just let people come in. And the fact that this is even a political issue is sad. Every nation has borders, and every nation has a reasonable expectation to try to protect those borders and not to just let anyone come in. And there's just a clear and present danger to just letting everyone coming in.
Yeah.
That's pretty simple to understand.
Well, yeah, there's that false narrative that, well, we're all immigrants, so let everybody come through.
Yeah.
Well, what is the whole world going to live within the supposed borders of America? The rest, everyone come here, every single human on Earth. It just doesn't work. You got to spread out a little bit, and it's okay to have people come into your nation, but there's legal processes for it, and that's always the issue. It's the legality of it. If you're just going to come in illegally, that's not what should be allowed. That's the issue. Not coming in, but doing it legally. That's the problem.
And Hillary Clinton got caught in audio actually telling a group of elites that she envisions a borderless world where as many as 600 million people could just come in. That we have less than 400 million people here right now, but she hopes that we can get 600 million more to come in.
Wow, 600 million?
That's the number I heard.
Whew.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I don't know. There's some room up there in the Dakotas.
That's true. If they want to go there. Yeah.
It's kind of barren in some places.
It's very cold. It gets
very cold.
Negative 30 or negative 40 up there.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just time to do a switcheroo. Let everybody come here. We go somewhere else. Yeah. Just like swapping houses.
Yeah. It's just a preposterous idea that she had. No borders. I mean, we aren't allowed to go to other countries around the world and just decide we'll live there. It's not that simple. We can do a mountain of paperwork and we can pay for it, but we can't just go there and settle down and that's fine.
Well, I mean, even within a country, there are borders, right? I mean, you have certain borders set up for things, and of course, we can travel freely, but not on private property. You can't. If you buy a house and you buy the land, that's your land. Mm-hmm. You have a right to put up a fence. I see fences all over the place.
Right.
Because it's their property. So what's wrong with that?
That's true. Yeah, and the comment that narrative that you said about it being a nation of immigrants is really just one that I've heard. I heard another one recently that said the immigrants the illegal immigrants commit fewer crimes than the Americans. Now, I don't know how the person saying this could have possibly gotten that figure, because every single illegal immigrant is automatically breaking one law.
Right.
There are plenty of Americans who never who never break a law their entire lives, I would think. So even just right there, the illegals are ahead when it comes to law breaking. But then after that, why should we just allow illegals to come in, even if they are saints, apparently, for the most part? There are inevitably going to be a few who are not saints, and there's no reason to let the bad ones come in along with the good ones just because overall they might commit fewer crimes than Americans. Well, we can't really deport American criminals. We have to put them in prison. Now, we do have an option to just keep other criminals from other nations out of our country. Why not just take that option?
That sounds like a pretty cooked stat there.
Yeah.
How would they even really know? Like, if they can't even keep track of how many came in here, how would you even know that?
I think there's just no way to tell. And yeah, that's why it's just, we aren't, even if you just use common sense, we aren't going to attract the most successful, prosperous people from every other nation because they're doing well where they are.
Sure.
And they're the ones who are far less likely to come over. That's not, that shouldn't be a racist thing to say.
Well, sure. And I mean, the thing that is often said too is, well, people just want a better life. Well, sure. Everybody wants a better life. That's fine. But you have to go about it a certain way. And just because you want something doesn't mean that that's you're just wanting it doesn't give you a right to have it. You know, you might want a brand new car. It doesn't mean you can just walk down to the lot today and say, I'm taking this because I really want it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Buy it then.
Yeah, that's true. And it's, and even those who are pushed to desperation, like in the Middle East right now, maybe they are desperate and they feel like they need to make a run for it and try to skirt the law. But at the same time, I think even they are expecting to be deported if they're caught. I mean, that's kind of how it goes. They're desperate, which is why they're breaking the law to get here. But they still should understand that it's not going to be that easy if they get caught.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of people coming through that border up through Mexico. But there's one thing, Grant, that is not coming up through the border as much as it has been in the past, and that is our good friend the avocado.
Oh,
you like avocados?
They're great. Don't get them very often.
Yeah,
but they are very good.
They're very good, and they're good for you. It says there's bad news for avocado lovers. Our little final story here today. A nationwide shortage of the popular fruit has sent avocado prices through the roof, they say, according to Time. The U.S. typically receives about 40 million pounds of avocados each week from Mexico. That's a lot of avocados.
Wow.
When it comes to avocados, I think there should be open borders. It says, but that hasn't been the case lately. Just 2 weeks ago, the U.S. received a mere 13 million pounds of the popular fatty fruit. So that's down quite a bit. Most of the avocados eaten in the U.S. come from Mexico, where avocado growers have been withholding the green fruit in an effort to negotiate higher prices for it. Thanks a lot. That's not helping us any. A weak avocado harvest in California this summer and early fall exacerbated the shortage. So I guess they saw that we had a weaker harvest, and they said, well, we're going to hold back some of our avocados to get the prices to be raised higher. So if you like avocados, you might notice a spike in the price.
Well, yeah, that's the equivalent of maybe 1/30th of a pound or 1/40th of a pound of avocados per person. So, yeah, it seems like there aren't a whole lot of avocados to go around right now, and you better be willing to shell out some cash if you really like them.
Yeah, the black market avocado selling. I don't know if that's a thing. How do you make guacamole if you don't have avocados?
Maybe they have the first dibs. All the Mexican restaurants have first dibs.
I don't know. It's a delicious food, though. It's one of the what they call superfoods, and the top superfoods. As in a related note here, it used to just be called food back in the day, but now it's superfood because it actually has something in it.
Right.
The top 10 here are almonds, kale, flax, avocado, turmeric, of course, whatever that is, blueberry, coconut, cauliflower, kefir, and bulgur. So I don't know what some of those things are, but some of them I do. They're superfoods. So if you need if you're feeling a little down, you need a little extra energy, hit up one of those superfoods. But beware that the avocado will set you back.
You will be paying quite a bit for that.
Superfood, and you'll be super broke at the end of the buying and the eating of the avocado. So
I think kefir's pretty expensive as well.
All that stuff is the health food stuff is very expensive. And you have to be careful. Sometimes you go into a health food store and everything's raised in price a little bit, but some of it's the same stuff you see at Walmart. Not always, but in some cases it is.
It takes a discerning eye to pick out what things you should only buy at the health food store and what things you could get for cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a couple. If I could have my desires of my heart, I would have a very large and prosperous avocado plant. I guess it's a tree. Plant. I'm exposing my ignorance here.
How those are made either.
Well, I want a lot of avocados in my yard and a lemon tree. If I have those two things, I would be a happy camper.
Definitely.
But not easy to do here in Oklahoma.
We have the red clay.
Yeah.
So that's...
The only crop that I can get to grow is thistles. They grow in abundance, but I haven't found a way to use them except to keep intruders off my lawn. Because they're going to be all over your feet.
Oh.
Those things hurt like crazy.
They
and
do.
You pull it off your foot, and then it's stuck on your finger. And then you pull it off the other hand, and then it's stuck on that finger, and then it's just a vicious cycle. Even my cat can't get rid of those things. So, anyway, if anyone wants to send me some avocados and lemons, I'd appreciate it. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today on this Monday edition. Thanks for joining us, and have a great rest of your day. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, we appreciate you spending some time with us. We'll see you here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.